Pepper Bottle here with you, 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Orion's coming up, or Max, possibly, with the morning show in an hour. We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio here on the Magnificent Mile in the Tribune Tower. Joining us on the line right now from overseas in London is our friend Julia McFarlane from the BBC. Hey, Julie, how are you this morning?
Hi, Matt. I'm great. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone with us. Lots of stuff going on in both of our countries these days. I know that I follow you and a bunch of your friends on Twitter, and I see a lot about your election. When is your election coming up?
So our election is, the polls will open this Thursday. So we are in the final days of the campaign, and it's been an interesting campaign. It's been a lot of twists and turns. It's been a campaign that no one was expecting to happen this year at all. So it's been an interesting few months.
This is fascinating because this is so not how it works here. Not only do you guys just say, "Hey, you know what? We're going to have an election. I'm calling for an election. Let's have an election." Everybody has to go, "All right, here we go." But it was just like a couple of months ago that happened, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's interesting because obviously last year we followed your elections over in the US very closely, and at the same time last year when we were getting ready to have our EU referendum, when the UK voted to leave, we all of a sudden had our Prime Minister standing down, a whole tumultuous set of events, a leadership contest for the incumbent government, all wrapped up in a matter of weeks. And a lot of my American friends were thinking, it takes us so long to elect a president. How do you guys do it so quickly? So it's funny when you compare and contrast.
It is interesting. And I wonder if for the media companies over there, because I'll tell you what, it was a boon for all the television and radio stations here because an insane amount of money is spent on advertising when we have, especially these insanely long, dragged out campaigns. And for a state like Iowa here in the U.S., Iowa has the first in the nation primary. So these candidates spend all this time in Iowa, which otherwise would be a really overlooked state as far as an election goes. And all this money is spent there. And so every 2 to 4 years, we have a very boom bust cycle for a lot of organizations because of the money that's spent on advertising.
It's funny you should say that, and I would highly recommend an article written by our media editor, the BBC's media editor, called Amal Rajan, and he did a piece on how Trump, despite a lot of his conflicts with the press, may just in fact be the savior of a lot of the media.
And how the
Trump presidency has, has sort of helped save, dying print industries, have brought newspapers up to, some of their strongest game in years. And so that was a really great article. So I'd encourage you to have a look at that.
Yeah, I will. And it's true that, newspapers, print newspapers are dying terribly here in the U.S. And there is a very big campaign right now with the New York Times and others to say now's the time to buy a newspaper because you need to invest in investigative journalism and quality journalism. And so I'm sure Donald Trump isn't happy to know that he's helping the newspaper industry because he's pretty mad at all of them. But I think he is helping a renewed interest in quality journalism and investigative journalism. Definitely. It's been an interesting time over here, to say the least. And, Julie, I want to point out, so you just sent out a nice little tweet saying, "Hey, I'm going to be on WGN Radio. Anybody in Chicago, wake up and pay attention." And you sent a little GIF of Jimmy Fallon waving, saying good morning. And that's another thing that's been very interesting. Jimmy Fallon took over The Tonight Show a couple of years ago, and he has been killing it. Was killing it here in the ratings because it's very funny and very gamey. He's not real big on the interviews, but he's having a lot of fun, wacky stuff with his guests. And Stephen Colbert, who had a show called The Colbert Report, where he was a mock right-wing guy that was making fun of the right wing here in the States. And then he took over for David Letterman, and he was really struggling. And then Trump came. And now I believe Colbert is actually beating Jimmy Fallon in the ratings, at least in some demos. It's totally saved his show. Oh, it's fascinating to see. And MSNBC and Rachel Maddow, who are considered on the left here, their ratings have really increased a lot because of, all the angst that has been generated by this presidency and for the people who are upset about it. So it's been a very interesting time in the media here in the U.S., that's for sure.
For sure.
Okay, so tell us what's going on over there. Well, let me ask you first. What's the reaction been in the UK to the US pulling out of the Paris Accord?
I think it is part of our sort of recognizing that President Trump is a new type of president. He is certainly not conventional. He is doing things his own way. And while a lot of while a few of his campaign pledges have not yet sort of been fulfilled, his big campaign to repeal and replace Obamacare and a lot of other things, his pledges to pull the US out of the Paris Climate Accord is one of the things that he said he would do, and lo and behold, he has said he's going to do this. So he has been very clear about the fact that he wants to, you know, he wants to change America. He wants to take it into a different direction. So I think while there was a lot of surprise and shock from this side of the pond when that announcement came through, I think probably we should have been expecting Trump to make good on what he said. I mean, on this side of the pond, we have seen a lot of criticism of Theresa May for not signing the agreement along with several European governments, sort of reaffirming their commitment and expressing disappointment in the US in pulling out. Now, Theresa May has said that the UK still is part of the Paris Accord. We still support it. And she said that she had conveyed her disappointment to the president in a personal phone call. She actually said the reason why she did not sign that letter along with Merkel and Macron was because she had already had the conversation with President Trump and she felt she didn't need to.
Do you buy that?
I think Theresa May is in a difficult position.
Because she's running for election, right?
No, not because of that, but because, obviously because of that. I mean, it's always difficult and when you are sort of 4 or 5 days running a campaign. But she is in the position where she is the incumbent prime minister and she has been tasked with taking this country out of Europe. And she is going to have to juggle all sorts of things. She's got some very tough negotiations going ahead of her. Trade and the economy is all at stake. And the United States, as one of our closest ally, we like to think that the feeling is mutual, the special relationship that we've got going.
Well, it depends on the day of the week these days, Julie. You never know what you're going to get. And you're right. If she would have come out and saying we're very upset, then you never know.
Well, she did say that she was disappointed. She said that she had told the president that she was disappointed with his decision. But she has got to tread a line here. The U.S. is an incredibly important strategic, trade partner, cultural partner for the U.K. And as controversial and divisive as President Trump is, although the relationship between two countries goes beyond the state leaders, she still has to work with President Trump. And they have talked to each other a lot. I believe that Theresa May was one of the first people that, head of government that President Trump had telephoned after he won the election and after the inauguration. He's due to visit the UK on a visit later this year, although we don't know when that's going to happen. So, you know, when anything that is to do with Europe and the US, Britain has a difficult line to tread.
Sure.
Because obviously we have our own domestic policy, which is the UK supports the Paris Climate Accord. The UK, the British government is taking steps to try and mitigate sort of climate change here and there, particularly with London being, you know, have pollution is a huge problem with, you know, with London and a lot of the Conservative Party, they've tried to put a lot of green focus on their policies. A lot more back when David Cameron, the former Prime Minister, he tried to mark himself as a very sort of green eco-friendly politician. But this is difficult because she's got to reflect, you know, policies and key issues that we feel strongly about here in the UK. But we've also got to not sabotage our relationship.
Sure.
With the president of the United States, which is going to be a key critical ally in the years ahead.
Does she worry at all, though, that by not standing with those European leaders, because she has a delicate thing going on there, too, or somebody's going to if she doesn't get reelected, is how this deal to exit the European Union works out. So I imagine there was also some, okay, if I sign this thing, then I got Trump is all mad at me. But if I don't do this, then maybe these guys are like, well, you know, you got the whole Brexit thing. We're going to make it hard on you. Do you think that she faces pressure from European allies to appease them as well?
I'm not sure, honestly, how the politics of the Paris Climate Accord is going to impact Brexit. I mean, that's not we discussed it a lot. A lot of people were talking about it when President Trump announced he was pulling out of it. But it's more in the final few days of the campaign. We are still more sort of grappling with domestic politics,
sure.
With sort of Brexit, what's going to happen. People's main priorities are we going to have a trade deal? What are they going to be tariffs? What are the barriers going to be? And a lot of people will be wondering, what about immigration? People will be wondering, will immigration continue to rise? Or will I still be able to attract the talent and the workers that I need? And, you know, from the continent, that, you know, in order to keep my business afloat. So there's people on both sides of debates of various different issues. And so I think we are more sort of focusing on that on the last few days of the campaign.
How are things looking? I know you can't always trust the polls, as we learned here in the U.S. in the last election, but is there any real threat that Theresa May does not get reelected?
I don't know that there are many people who are saying that. It's interesting because in the last few weeks there have been a shift in a lot of the polls. I don't really want to quote any polls, just because I think we should be quite skeptical of polls. They were all so wrong last year. Mm-hmm. They were some of them were very wrong in the Scottish referendum. A lot of the polls were wrong in the 2015 general election, and of course a lot of the polls were wrong last year in the EU referendum. But what has been interesting is that this general election campaign period opened with Theresa May riding on a huge high, and the tabloids would splash every day on how she had such a commanding lead of the polls, soon after she announced that we were going to go to the polls again in general election, that it was going to be a conservative wipeout. It was going to be of historic magnitudes, and they were expecting sort of a clean sweep across the board. What's happened in the last week is one of the main polling companies in the UK called YouGov, they have come out with this new model that they say they have tried to address some of the issues and some of the inaccuracies from the polls last year and the previous years, and they've tried to get a more accurate reading of how they think the country would vote if the country were to go to the polls on the day that their findings were published. So I think it was maybe Tuesday or Wednesday or of last week. I can't remember when, but they came out with a result that was starkly different from a lot of the polls. We've had polls before estimating that the Tories were on a 15 to even 20 point lead, and that was huge news earlier on in the campaign, whereas this new YouGov model, this new YouGov poll, put the lead much, much narrower. In fact, put the Conservative lead narrower than it was between David Cameron, who was a Tory Prime Minister in 2015, against Ed Miliband, who was the leader of the opposition. So that was interesting. And soon after that, there have been a few polls that have also shown narrowing leads in the polls. So a lot of pundits and political reporters who I've been following have said, you know, this is known to happen. There is a Tory wobble. We saw this in 2015, where there was a poll or a few polls that were published a fortnight or 3 weeks before the elections where it looked like it was really going down to the wire, some actually putting Labour ahead. And of course, what happened in 2015 was the Conservatives won a slim but a majority nonetheless. So that took a lot of people by surprise. In 2015, we were all expecting a hung parliament. We were expecting there to be another coalition, because in 2010. In that general election, that was that resulted in a hung parliament, and the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats formed a governing coalition. And we were expecting the same thing to happen in 2015. Now, the phrase hung parliament has come back in again. And so people again are starting to talk about hung parliaments and what happens if Theresa not only doesn't make the huge majority that we were all expecting her to make a few weeks ago, but not only that, but fails to win outright. And what happens then?
And what would happen then? How, if she didn't get reelected, how badly would that screw things up as you head into the Brexit negotiations? Will that change things drastically, do you think?
Well, I think it would be, we would be in new territory. If Theresa May failed to get elected and we saw, if we saw a Labour majority, a lot of people were saying that's very unlikely, but if we saw a Labour majority government, Labour have set out their position that they are committed to respecting the result of the EU referendum. They will take the UK out of the EU, but they have a very different strategy from the Tories. They have a much more sort of Euro-friendly-esque attitude. They would be open to looking at keeping some of the benefits of EU membership, such as, you know, staying in the single market. Immigration is unclear where Labour stands, because Jeremy Corbyn, when he has discussed this in public, when he's been asked about immigration, he has said that his position is that he is wanting to focus on something called the Workers Directive. He basically wants to stop the undercutting of wages, which basically means that British jobs, where someone working in a job in the UK is paid, you know, the minimum wage being much higher than that of other countries, the fact that we have an influx of people coming in from across the UK has meant that a lot of companies have been able to lower what they pay people, because labour is cheap, because immigration is immigration is on and up. And he thinks, and he says that that is exploitation, that's taking advantage, that is undercutting workers. Workers should all be paid, at the minimum rate, and stop the undercutting of wages. And he believes that that is a problem. So whether that tackles, the issues with immigration that some people have in this country, that we have a surplus net migration and we have a increasing population every year, remains to be seen.
What's the follow-up been from the Manchester attack? What's being said over there now regarding that? I imagine it's opened up a lot of wounds and probably fostered its way into the politics going on as well, right?
I'm not sure that it has really affected the campaign that much, is my personal opinion. I mean, it was a ghastly thing to happen last week, actually. To be honest, I mean,
of course,
when the first alerts came out, it was quite late at night, and I was coming in on an early morning shift the next day, so I got the BBC News alert on my phone late on Monday, and the first reports were that there had been an explosion of some sorts, or, you know, loud noises or a bang or something at an Ariana Grande concert in Manchester. And there was a lot of confusion. There were people, there were correspondents and journalists who were phoning the police and who talked to people there. So, there were some people who were saying that it was a balloon and a speaker, that it wasn't, everyone was saying, no, don't be silly, it's not a terrorist attack, stop scaremongering, it was something wrong with the speakers. And so I read those reports, and so I thought, it's just a balloon and a speaker, as these reporters are saying. So I went to bed, and then I woke up the next morning, very early in the morning, and I opened my phone, and all that had gone. Police were investigating a bombing at Manchester, And that was a shock. And so then, you know, coming into work and sort of having all the resources of the agencies and all the and all the updates coming in, and as the story began to really take shape, it became more and more clear just how serious this was. And what was very, very striking for me, actually, and I think this is sadly just a shape of things to come, is because, you know, I certainly wasn't on social media that much back in the 7/7 bombings, but now when there is something awful that happens, there is the very, very tortuous and painful period where people are desperately trying to find their loved ones. Yeah. And there were so many people who had been virally tweeted pictures of their parents, of their brothers, of their sisters, of their children, saying, I haven't heard from my friend or you know, my dad or my brother. Has anyone seen them? Can anyone help me? Can anyone help me find them? And that really sort of brings it home for a lot of people, because a lot of the initial reactions to seeing someone react to something as ghastly as this, you generally won't really get up and close and hear the words that they say unless you know them. But now with social media, everyone has a front row seat to the anguish that people have when yeah. something like this happens. And it was just heartbreaking. And also the fact that this attack happened at a concert that was full of young girls, young boys, having fun, doing nothing wrong, yeah. parents collecting their kids, parents coming together to collect their kids. That was one thing that really, really struck me. I mean, there was two of the victims were a mum and a dad who were turning up together to collect their daughter. And which I just thought was so heartbreaking. I mean, when I was a child, if I was away at doing something and my parents picked me up, they would often take it in turns to pick me up. But the fact that these two parents came together to pick up their daughter and were both killed together, I think was just such a heartbreaking thing to try and compute. And I think a lot of us are still honestly sort of failing to compute really what happened and yeah. why it did.
And we fail to do that more and more these days. That's the sad thing about it, is there seems to be no end in sight and no real plan for how we're going to change the world so that these things don't happen. All right, let's end on a lighter note for a second. You had a royal-ish wedding. Pippa Middleton, right, the sister of the princess, right? Got married last weekend or the weekend before? A couple weeks ago, right?
A few weeks ago, yeah.
So that wasn't a royal wedding, but did it have a bit of a feel of a royal wedding since the royals were there?
It kind of did. Pippa Middleton, she's a bit of a celebrity now.
Pippa here, by the way. We did. When they got married and we discovered Pippa, the U.S. went a little crazy over Pippa.
Do you know, it's funny because I was working on the day of the Pippa Middleton wedding, and it was funny because we have all of our screens up in the newsroom and we have a big CNN screen as well. And I swear CNN was covering Pippa Middleton when we were spending way more time on American politics, which was really hilarious. But
we need
yeah,
our distractions here, Julie. You don't understand. We
don't
can't keep
you.
Doing this 24 hours a day.
I don't blame you. It's nice to have something, you know, some nice news once in a while. And everyone can get behind a pseudo-royalesque wedding.
Yeah, absolutely. So when is Harry going to get hitched? What's going on over there? When are you going to have a real royal wedding?
When Harry gets married, that is just going to be a media bonanza.
I imagine.
I was actually, funny enough, I was actually at the University of St. Andrews when the actual royal wedding happened with the Duchess of Cambridge and Prince William. And St. Andrews, I mean, the whole media circus also descended on St. Andrews, because that is, of course, where they met, where they, you know, where they first started going out. And the wedding happened when we were all studying for our finals, and, you know, we couldn't get to our tutorials on time because we were blocked by the press.
Oh,
and
my
so
gosh.
It was pretty hilarious. But yeah, I mean, everyone is in love with Meghan Markle. A lot of people have been, you know, is she going to be the one? Is Harry going to pop the question?
Yeah.
Who knows? But if they do, it's going to be huge. It's going to be another circus. CNN is probably going to forget who the president is, and it's going to be a happy. Hopefully, it's going to be a happy happy occasion. And you know, who's she going to wear? What dress is she going to wear? All those questions. Yeah, who knows? Who knows? I think we need some good news.
I think you're right. You know, so. It's so funny, Julie, because I think that there are times in the world where there's all this silly news like, that's not important. Why are we paying attention to that? Why are we wasting our time on that? We become such a reality TV culture and we care about the Kardashians, blah, blah, blah. And now we're at a time where everything is so serious and there's always so much all the time that we're like, yeah, what's Kim Kardashian doing? Anybody talk about it earlier? Where's Kim's butt? Let's find out about that because we need a break from everything else. Julia McFarlane is a reporter and producer at the BBC. You can follow her on Twitter. She's a great follow on Twitter, at Julia McFarlane. Find her on Twitter, and she's so nice to jump on the show with us once in a while. We'll check back in with you in a couple of weeks or a month or so or right after the election, okay?
Talk to you soon. Yeah,
thank you so much, Julia. Have a great day.
You too. Take care. Bye.
Bye bye. Julia McFarlane with the BBC. Let's see.